Okay, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Innovations in Education, eSchool News' podcast on the latest and greatest in everything EdTech. I'm your host, Kevin Hogan. I'm the content director for eSchool News, and I'm glad you found us. In this episode, I'm joined once again by our resident cybersecurity expert, Doug Levin, to discuss the evolving landscape of digital threats in schools. Doug is the co-founder and national director of the K-12 Security Information Exchange. That's a national nonprofit dedicated solely to helping schools protect themselves from emerging cybersecurity threats. He brings over 3 decades of experience in ed tech policy issues to this role. So as school districts increasingly rely on technology for both classroom instruction and administrative operations, they face growing cybersecurity risks, from ransomware attacks forcing school closures to sophisticated phishing schemes that target administrators. These threats continue to evolve. So in this episode, we explore the current state of cybersecurity incidents. We look into how attackers are becoming more sophisticated in targeting schools, and we identify practical steps that district leaders can take to protect their systems. Have a listen. I think Doug's insights will be very valuable for you. Okay, Doug, as always, a pleasure to see you through the Zoom and to have a conversation. I always appreciate your insights over the years on what our readers and our listeners can do to help protect their schools and districts. So thanks for joining me.
Yeah, my pleasure to be with you, Kevin.
I guess usually when we have our annual updates, we did these through COVID, right? And you think like that might have been the craziest of times. As we sit here, it's a different flavor of crazy, but things continue to be interesting, right?
Right. I think it's what may you live in interesting times, right, is the curse as it goes.
Yeah. So let's dive right into it. I'm assuming from, you know, reading your work and others that it's not like cybersecurity has gotten any less worrisome, right? If not, it's gotten even worse.
The trend lines are certainly continuing, right? We're seeing school systems, you know, pretty frequently becoming victims of cybersecurity incidents, typically seeing nearly one a day happening to some school system, large or small, across the U.S. We are seeing an increase in sophistication and targeting against K-12, so less drive-by and more targeted. They understand they're attacking schools. They may understand who the superintendent is or who the principal is. They may be grabbing graphic elements, you know, from the school system website or spoofing that. So that's certainly quite worrisome. And then, of course, we've seen the impact of these incidents continue to grow as well. And we can think about impact really any way you want to conceive of it, whether it's the amount of data that has been stolen and leaked from school systems, the sensitivity of that data, the amount of money maybe that school systems have been extorted out of or has been stolen from them through scams or even through operational disruptions. And it's increasingly common that we've seen school systems literally have to close, send students and teachers home, and not even be able to deliver any services whatsoever in responding to a significant incident. The only bright side on that latter point is typically when school systems are, you know, essentially have that worst case scenario happen, they usually will limit closures to maybe 2 or 3 days, usually bookended around a weekend or something like that. But even still, when students and teachers are back in school, it can be weeks or sometimes even months before their IT systems are restored. You know, it's just what needs to get restored in order to guarantee sort of the safety of kids to come back to school is what they're dealing with. So definitely still a challenge for us. And frankly, you know, we continue to rely on technology more and more for everything from the classroom to operations. And so this is risks and threats that we're facing and we're going to continue to face really forevermore, I think.
And one of the distinctions that I know in our past conversations, it's as much about human behavior as it is about the technology itself, right? And most of these things get more sophisticated and, you know, I just personally find myself continuing to have to fend off, that text from the boss, right? Asking me to go buy a gift card and talk a little bit about, you know, that it might not even be as much as the software as about training of your faculty and students. Yeah,
I may have a little bit of a contrary take on that issue, right? It's certainly something that I hear all the time. And there's no question that people being aware of scams and common scams and ways that, you know, cyber criminals are trying to convince people to click links or share information in unauthorized ways, that certainly is common. But I think what we try to focus on in our work are technical solutions that hopefully protect all users. If we can avoid getting that phishing email into somebody's inbox, we don't have to worry about them clicking it. If we can neutralize that malware or ransomware before it takes hold in a school system without a user having to intervene, so much the better. Because I think at the end of the day, even the training programs that send simulated phishing attacks and try to get people to click less and identify those phishing emails more accurately, you know, you're never going to get that down to zero. The real challenge I think we're facing, and you know, our members, school IT directors are facing, is creating systems that are resilient enough that a single teacher, a single student, their access being compromised doesn't result in the downfall of everybody's being affected. And I'd also note, we've seen this, you know, pretty dramatically in recent months. It's the weakest link that can bring down a system. In some cases, that link is within the school district itself. But in other cases, it's maybe their vendors or partners, right? And given that so many of the solutions that schools rely on are cloud hosted nowadays, it turns out that if a threat actor can compromise a vendor, they may be able to get data information from hundreds or thousands of school systems versus just one district at a time. Couple that with the fact that school systems and a lot of these online systems have data that is not just on current students and staff, but historical records going back 10, 20, 30, even 40 years. Just staggering to think about the amount that, you know, that amount of information, but also if it gets breached, like how do you even find people who were associated with the school system 20 years ago?
Right.
It's nearly an impossible task.
So what sort of suggestions would you have in terms of measures that our readers, our district executives right now, let's say they have some sort of level of cybersecurity.
Sure, of course, yeah.
Basic, you know, everything's basic. There's an understanding that's there. What are some next steps that they should be thinking about taking, or even just should they be asking their vendors and their partners?
Yeah, so, I mean, we are big believers in simplicity, right? School systems don't have the resources of Fortune 500 companies or the federal government. It's a rare school system that has a CISO or someone with a cybersecurity background in an IT role. And they've got tremendous number of responsibilities and things they're juggling every day just in supporting the teachers, administrators, and students in doing their work and keeping the systems up and running. What we do is we focus on the ways that school systems are frequently compromised, most frequently compromised, versus the edge cases where folks are taking advantage of sort of super sophisticated attacks that may involve 0 days, things for which we hadn't seen before. They may hit school systems, but the fact of the matter is that the cyber criminals who tend to go after schools tend to use well-worn techniques that we have pretty good defenses for. One set of practices is around password management and multi-factor authentication. It is frequently the case that when school systems are compromised, it is through a compromised credential. So literally the threat actor has stolen or social engineered someone into giving a username and password to them. And then they will try that against a school system. And then once they're in, they're able to escalate and get into a lot of mischief. So multi-factor authentication is a super important step to guard against that. School systems have made tremendous progress in rolling that out, but too often it is just on some systems or maybe for some users. And interestingly, in the last few years, we've seen students become a vector for school incidents as well. So I think it wasn't that long ago we thought of student accounts as being pretty innocuous, and it wouldn't be unusual for a school system to assign easily guessable username and password to a student, maybe their birthday, and maybe that wouldn't change for their whole academic career. Well, it turns out that, you know, kids reuse usernames and passwords across services. Once you understand how that algorithm works, it's easy to generate it for others as well. And that's led to some some large incidents that have affected school systems nationwide, coupled with sort of oversharing that's going on in either Google Workspace or Microsoft 365, depending on the system that the school system uses. So locking down those credentials for all users, I think, is a big thing to do. The second is really limiting what school systems are exposing to the internet, right? So it's trivial for folks to use scanners online to look for known vulnerable software. So people issue patches, issue vulnerability alerts, and then the bad guys can go to search engines online that are sort of very similar to Google and search for servers that are running vulnerable software and then take advantage of that using known exploits. So there's really two things that we ask school systems to do. One is to sort of know what you have facing the internet and limit what you can. If it's a service running and you don't need it, shut it down. Or if you can't shut it down, find a way to limit its exposure to the web. You can geo IP block to keep traffic from certain countries coming. You can put a web application firewall in front of it. You can put a VPN in front of it, but just something that is not just leaving it exposed, unprotected to the web. And then related to that, making sure to keep tabs on when patches are available for your internet-facing products and making sure that you're patching those systems, frankly, pretty promptly. Some threat actors, the time from vulnerability to actually, you know, vulnerability just disclosed to an exploit built and then sort of used in the real world, that timeline is shrinking rather quickly. And so, you know, there may be older rules of thumbs that you want to patch within 30 days or 90 days. Well, we're seeing, you know, exploits in some cases within hours. So we certainly encourage folks to get onto a faster patching cadence, particularly for security patches for internet-facing systems. So those are really the things that we encourage people to focus on most. I mean, there's a whole set of other practices that are good, that are important, but those, you know, working on those, I think, would go a long way to reducing the challenges that a lot of school systems continue to face.
Yeah. Now, in terms of resources, obviously, your organization is up there at the top of the list to reach out to, but also in the past, a few years, there were a number of federal programs and federal kind of initiatives that we would point to at eSchool News to say, you know, upon further review, and you need to do so. What is that looking like these days? And I'll assume that those are limited now versus in the past. Where else would they reach out to?
It's an interesting story, right? I guess interesting in quotes. So I think, you know, over the last couple of years, we had started to make, I think, pretty significant inroads with the federal government to help them understand that the K-12 sector was under assault and needed support. And we saw support being marshaled out of CISA, the Federal Cybersecurity Agency. We saw the U.S. Department of Education starting to embrace its role in helping school systems navigate this issue. We've seen the FCC launch a cybersecurity pilot program as well. And there was other money devoted to sort of SLTT, state and local governments, broadly speaking, for which schools could benefit depending on your state. Unfortunately, what we've seen in the first, 3 months of this new administration is a pretty significant sea change in how this administration is viewing the federal role with respect, at least let me speak narrowly, to cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Right. So the U.S. Department of Education's work has ceased, and there's obviously been large cutbacks there. So there's no longer a venue for stakeholders to engage with the department on these issues. We're not expecting more resources on these issues that we're aware of to be coming out of the department, and some of what they have produced previously is no longer to be found on their website. For its part, CISA still provides resources for K-12, but just even earlier this week, there have been announcements that they're going through their own significant downsizing. And one of the projects that CISA and its parent organization, the Department of Homeland Security, have been funding is a group called MSISAC, or the Multi-State ISAC. And so they serve all of state and local government, including school systems. They've had a flat 50% of funding to them cut suddenly, without warning. And I should say so far, right? And so that support is gone from schools. And at least right now, it does appear that the FCEC pilot program is continuing apace. But obviously, I would say that right now, its prospects for becoming a permanent part of the E-Rate program or the Universal Service Fund, I think, are probably a little bit longer than they were, a few months ago. So, you know, in talking to some colleagues, it almost feels like we're just sort of back to where we were maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, where, you know, enterprising groups of districts and regions and states working together are really having to bootstrap this support themselves. So on a good news front, at K-12-6, K-12 Security Information Exchange, we act as a K-12 specific ISEC. We don't have any federal funding. The federal government doesn't dictate what we cover, and they're not the primary source for our threat intel for our members. So we work with a number of private providers and others to source that threat intel. So our work continues apace, but it's a big country and there's a lot of people engaged in it. And there's no question that, you know, while some resources remain, these sorts of cuts, coupled with other financial pressures that districts are facing, from threats to school lunch funding, you know, there's concerns about, you know, ESSER stimulus money being yanked back without warning, right? All that creates uncertainty for school systems. And at the end of the day, if the choice is between, you know, busing kids to school and feeding them, or buying that new advanced firewall system, or, you know, getting 24/7 SOC monitoring, like, you know where that money is gonna go. And there's sort of no argument with that, but it does suggest that schools are going to be even softer targets than they have been in the past. And there's certainly no reason to believe that the threat landscape is going to be changing whatsoever as far as schools are concerned. Certainly cyber criminals have been successful in getting money one way or another from school systems, either by directly extorting it or selling data that they've stolen from schools. So we don't have any reason to believe that's going to change. So challenging times, but opportunities for us to come together, continue to come together, develop, you know, sort of common sense, best practice. Really, our emphasis is really just focusing on a few key things and working to kind of raise the tide for all the boats there on those, you know, getting the basics right.
Yeah, and a desperate attempt on my part to leave this conversation with the glass half full. Talk a little bit about the fact that districts do come together, right? I mean, there are those sort of grassroots sort of things. And I know from various ed tech conferences that I go to, it's like sharing best practices. As an industry, it seems like this group wants to help each other as opposed to keeping secrets to themselves, right?
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely right, Kevin. So I was contacted by a reporter in regards to the PowerSchool incident. And they felt that it was remarkable that they saw online and in various groups that school systems were collaborating with each other to respond to this incident. And because I guess they don't see that in other sectors. And I think it's just the most natural thing in the world for us. You know, I think we're used to not having a lot of resources. Certainly as compared to other sectors, we're in no way really competing with each other.
Yeah.
On this stuff, right? And everybody is under-resourced. Everybody, you know, people change jobs and go from district to district or from the district to the state or to other, you know, outside groups. And so, you know, we build these networks of support, and I think they're critically important. I mean, one of our primary recommendations, sort of in our longer list of recommendations for school systems on what to do, is to communicate and collaborate, right? And when I first started getting into this work, I joked that it sort of felt like Fight Club, which is, you know, the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about it.
Yeah.
I think we are well beyond that now. And I think people are actively talking about it and sharing in groups within states, in groups across states. And even, you know, just based, for instance, on our national conference, which we hold in February of every year, the conversations are a level deeper, right? And people are sort of engaging with much more nuance about these issues and sort of talking through, like, trying to figure out how to meet this moment, if you will.
Sure.
I also think, by the way, that there's an incredible opportunity right now for edtech vendors and suppliers to come together. You know, there's been some recent research that suggests something that we've seen coming, which is that school systems are going to be asking more from their vendors and suppliers with respect to cybersecurity and start asking for many more assurances that they're doing the right things. It feels very much like the emergence of the student data privacy issue about a decade ago. And right now it feels like school systems are struggling with figuring out what questions to ask and then kind of what the right answers are to those questions. It's a complicated thing, but I would argue that this is a moment in time where, you know, edtech companies probably could help the K-12 side get smarter about what to ask for. Like, what are signals of trust with respect to cybersecurity that school district leaders should be looking for before they make a purchase or adoption decision? And so we're relatively low in our maturity as a sector compared to others. The good news is that we can make pretty dramatic progress pretty fast if we can drive to some consensus on some key issues.
Yeah. Well, obviously you're very busy and get busier every day. I really appreciate you taking the time out to speak with me. Always a really informative conversation with insights that are really helpful for our readers and listeners. So thank you. And thank you, your group, for the work that you do. It's hugely important. And look forward to keeping the conversation going.
Yeah, you bet, Kevin. Keep up the good fight.
And that's all we have for this month's edition of Innovations in Education here at eSchool News. I'd like to thank you for getting to the end. I think the conversation with Doug was really instrumental, and I hope that it's helpful for you. Until next time, I'm Kevin Hogan, and thanks again for clicking through.